Hosting SpursCast, episode 640. My name is Paul Garcia, and I'm your host here on SpursCast. Today I'll be joined by Project Spurs writer Rocky Garza Jr. In this episode, Rocky and I will look at the Spurs' last two wins and the backup center position. Let's go ahead and jump right into this episode with Rocky. Rocky, how are you doing?
Good, Paul. How are you today?
I'm doing well. You know, welcome to the SpursCast. This is your first time here on the SpursCast. So the SpursCast listeners, we're introducing a new member from our team at Project Spurs. Rocky's been riding with us for a while. Can you just give the listeners some background info on you, Rocky?
Yeah, so I recently started writing as a freelance journalist just last year. I've hit a year so far. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate enough to get a chance with Michael, I believe, several months ago, starting in March. I was kind of nerve-wracking because I had been asking Michael, hitting him up, even though I didn't know who he was, and I'm just fortunate enough to get these opportunities that Project Spurs has presented me, which has allowed me to hop on the podcast today with you, and also be on Sweep League Radio with Rudy Campos, which has been pretty cool and exciting.
Nice, yeah, Rudy has that show going on Sundays. Yes, SpursCast listeners, so again, if you've been visiting Project Spurs for the last few months, you have seen Rocky's writing on there, and this year, for this season, he's been providing weekly previews of like the games that are upcoming for the week and kind of how the Spurs are doing, and you've been giving your predictions. So yeah, so make sure you check out Rocky's work over on Project Spurs. So yeah, so let's go ahead and jump right into this episode, Rocky. So topic one, SpursCast listeners, the latest games and team updates. There hasn't been that many because I last recorded on Saturday, so basically there's only been one game played since the last SpursCast. The Spurs, though, did win. They went 1-0 since that last SpursCast. Let's go back to Monday now, a few nights ago. And Rocky and I do want to note, are recording this on a Wednesday evening. The Spurs picked up a comfortable win over the Washington Wizards by 18 points. The Wizards were favored by 2.5, and the Spurs did fall behind by 10 early on in the game. Then they ended up coming back and building an 18-point lead late. And so what's notable about this is that this is the first time this entire season the Spurs have actually come back from a double-digit deficit. They're now 1-12, because I know that's something I mentioned, where they were basically winless whenever that happened. And they're now actually 5-1 when holding opponents below 100 points. So it gets to the fact that they have 6 wins and 5 of them have come because they play that lockdown defense has been a big part of them finding some success. And then Derek White in this night against Washington on Monday, he had a season-high 24 points. He scored 12 of his points in the paint, being very aggressive, attacking the Wizards' defense. And then also he's got his three-point shot going for this game, where he made 9 points from three. Even Coach Pop after the game basically said Derek White is back to being the Derek White that the Spurs know. So we'll see now if that goes forward. Rocky, what were your thoughts on this win over the Wizards?
Yeah, so I thought Derek White, you know, trying to redeem himself. You know, he's been getting flack from the whole, I guess, not really the team, but just from fans, of how poor his play has been. And the whole workload has really just been on DeJounte, you know. But I'm glad to see Derek White and get his confidence back. I as that quote that you saw from Pop, I think they were talking about how Derek was feeling it himself since that foot injury. So you really saw that Derek White attack in that third quarter, where he just had one of the best games of his career. So going into the next game against Portland, we have to see that if he's going to carry that confidence, and he should have an advantage coming into this game, because you know there's going to be no Damian Lillard and just only going to be CJ. So we'll have to see what's going to happen.
Yeah, for sure. So again, we'll see if that carries forward for Derek. It's something Rocky and I will talk about a little bit. He's actually put together two solid games, and we'll see if that's the same going forward. So now some other notes. So basically, how did they do, the team, since I last recorded? They should have gone 0-1 according to Vegas. They ended up, going 1-0, so they got that win. It's notable, you know, it doesn't sound like much, but it's a 2-game winning streak. Finally, some positives for this team. Again, a 2-game winning streak doesn't sound like much, but right now in this season for the Spurs, that's like a big deal, because it is their first winning streak of the season. So right now they are 6-13 through 19 games on the season. They're 12th out west, so they did move up since that last episode. They're still 3.5 games out of 10th for that play-in game, and actually Denver's actually fallen to 10th as Rocky and I record this. As far as the lottery odds, well, if the Spurs win games, that means that their pick, later on down the line, does get worse. So right now they have the 6th worst record in the NBA, which gives them a 37% chance at top 4 and a 9% chance at number 1. On offense, they're 21st. They moved up a little bit, and then defense, they're kind of still right there at league average at 15th. Some notes on some players that are injured. Not Coach Pop, but the Spurs did put Doug McDermott and Devin Vassell on the injury report, but as probable. So they've continued to improve, and like Coach Pop said, they're both not going to be out for a long time with these injuries that they're sustaining right now. Rocky, did you have any comments on either the record or just how they're doing?
No, I mean, like you said, it's pretty good that they're on a 2-game winning streak. You know, they need all the confidence they can. You know, the coming into this season, there was a couple questions of who was going to take over the team. You've seen DeJounte have it step up and take that leadership role, but there were still questions on, you know, who was going to be the closer and the stud of the team. And some opinions and some fans have seen, you know, DeJounte has been the closer so far, but dude, they've been so inconsistent on closing games, and the record shows for it. You know, they've been in those close games, but it's just them learning how to get over that curve to grow together. So, I mean, 2-game winning streak, it may not seem a lot to, you know, NBA casual fan or any other team, but, I mean, that's just something that's going to be boosting their confidence and help them get better as they go.
For sure, yeah. No, for sure. I agree with you 100% there. Let's move on to our second topic. And again, it's just two wins, but you want to look at some commonalities of what's going on here in these two wins, kind of what are we seeing in some of the data for the Spurs to get these two wins. So, you know, offense, it hasn't been much. They're still not scoring a lot. They still have a lot of their same issues. One thing, though, that I did notice in both wins against Boston and Washington was that they kept their turnovers low. I know that they've been having some, even though they only average about 13 turnovers a night, the fact that they kept it at 10 and 11 turnovers in each of those games was a good sign, because then the defense can't get out and get those points off turnovers. So that's a good sign for the Spurs offensively, is that they've been having better ball security. That's probably also goes back to Derek White playing very well as well. And then defense is really making their mark here. Why they're getting these wins? Like I mentioned, when they play that elite defense, holding a team below 100 points, they're getting five of their six wins from those nights. So what am I noticing here? They're limiting opponent points from three. So again, Boston didn't shoot well from the 3-point line, and they didn't take that many attempts. Same thing for Washington. Like I mentioned there, both of those teams shot 29% each on that night against the Spurs. So that's one strength for the Spurs in these games. The opponents are struggling to finish in the paint, and this is probably attributed to Jakob Poeltl finally being back. So Jakob's now been in his fifth game since returning to the team off health and safety protocols. And so we see that the opponents, when they get to the rim, they're having a lot of trouble finishing there in the paint. The Spurs have done a great job in these two wins of keeping the opponent off the free throw line. Boston and Washington didn't get that many free throw attempts. They've also held both opponents below 100, like I mentioned earlier. They've really done a great job in transition of Boston only had six fast break points, and then Washington had zero, which was the best number for the Spurs defense so far this year. And then also, the Spurs have done a better job, not just against these two teams, but lately in about five of the last six games, they've done a great job of limiting the amount of threes that are attempted wide open from their opponents. So that's something that I've also seen a decline in the percentage. Did you have any comments there, Rocky, in either the offense or defense in these last two games?
No, I'm just glad to see that defense is picking up. You know, with Jakob's return, you saw the defense kind of struggle in that around the rim, you know, when Jakob was out. You know, Drew Eubanks is a respectable defender, and you saw that, you know, when they were playing the Wizards, you know, he had pretty good showing off the bench. But Jakob is just, he's just all around, and you can see that when he's not on the team, on the court, he's really affecting the team. So I'm glad to see that Jakob was back, you know, to help the team. But everything you said, you know, it's really helping the Spurs, you know, just close out, and it's going to be a factor for them down the stretch.
Yeah, and so some other notes that I've noted in these two games is we've already mentioned Jakob being back defensively. Also the fact that like DeJounte, Derek White, and Kelden have been like basically their three go-to players on offense here. DeJounte, and again, it's only two games, so it's a very small sample size. DeJounte's averaging 25.5 points in these last two games. Derek White's averaging 20.5, and he's the key player there, because he hadn't been averaging those kind of numbers. And then Kelden's been stable as well, with averaging 15 points in these last two games. So the fact that they have two players scoring over 20 points, and then plus you got Kelden there at 15. And another note that, you know, you really have to give some credit to another player, should I say, is Kata Bates-Jopp. I know that whenever Coach Pop says who's going to start, since Doug McDermott's been out, a lot of fans get upset. I see in my Twitter mentions because Kata Bates-Jopp continues to start. And actually, you got to remember, Kata Bates-Jopp is a good defender. He's not a bad defender, and so we're seeing that in some of this data, and why I think that the Spurs are having these nights where they're holding the opponent below 100 points. So when we just look at some initial data, we do see that the Spurs are a plus 15.4 points per 100 per cleaning the glass in 79 possessions with Kata Bates-Jopp starting alongside Jakob Poeltl and DeJounte, Derek White, and Keldon Johnson. On offense, the Spurs still have their issues there, 107.6 points per 100, but it's their defense that is playing elite defense whenever Kata's starting. They're holding teams to 92.2 points per 100 on defense. So this is a big difference, because, yes, we know that McDermott is the better offensive player compared to Bates-Jopp, but Bates-Jopp, you know, Cowboys by far in all the different stats: deflections, steals, defensive field goal percentage, contested shots, blocks, fouls, defensive rebounds. Bateschop just, you know, per 36, Bateschop just definitely outplays McDermott a lot of those different stats. So I think that's something that's a player who's not getting a lot of credit right now. It's Kata Bateschop. And it is going to be interesting once McDermott does get healthy and he returns, if Coach Pop continues with Bateschop there because it's a better defensive team with the starting five, or if he wants to have more so to bring the offense up by providing more spacing with McDermott. Rocky, what are your thoughts on that issue, you know, once McDermott comes back?
I think it's a good issue for Coach Pop to have. You know, obviously Doug McDermott's a better offensive weapon, as you mentioned, and spreads the floor better. But, I mean, I think Bateschop has earned himself some minutes off the bench. You know, looking at last game, you saw Thaddeus and Trey Jones were the leading two off the bench with 14 and 13 minutes. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how many minutes Bateschop gets from when McDermott comes back. Another thing I wanted to add is with White, if White continues to play good, it's only going to help, you know, the rest of the lineup. You would see Keldon more, you know, getting less defense attention if White's taking over that role, and that's only going to help Keldon and say a Devin Vassell grow. And if you continue to have Jakob stay healthy and guard the rim around, you're only going to see everyone else thrive and be able to help DeJounte. And I think lastly, you know, you speak of DeJounte. DeJounte's really proving to be, as I mentioned, that leader. And he's just, you know, walking triple-double as he goes. And he's only going to keep getting better. You know, some fans thought he was ready to hit his ceiling, but he's proving that he's taking over the whole team. But I personally, when I wrote an article about Bates Diop last year, I didn't think that, you know, he would be coming back to the team. But, you know, you see that Bates Diop is proving that he has earned himself in the rotation. And it should also be, you know, interesting if Drew Eubanks gets some minutes taken away from him. Or even Jock Landale. But Jock Landale hasn't even seen the floor this year. And it's been kind of strange because, you know, that was one of their big acquisitions. And a lot of fans thought, oh, you know, he can shoot. He saw it in the Olympics. But there's no question, I guess, why Pop's not really playing him.
Football fans, I'm sure we all love an action-packed, high-scoring NFL game. But with the latest no-brainer from DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, you'll be a winner once a single point scored. New customers who bet just $1 on any team to score can win $100 in free bets. It's that simple. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you can still get in on the NFL action. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contest. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code TBPN. Bet $1 on any team to score and win $100 in free bets. If they score, you score with promo code TBPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Yeah, so I'll save the Jock, you know, my comments on Jock in a little bit. I think we might see a solution to when he eventually gets minutes, but it's definitely not going to be right now. And I just have one more thing to say just on the starting five with Bateschop is just the fact that, like, there's no minus defender that teams can target, because you look at DeJounte and Keldon, and I mean, not DeJounte, Derek and Jakob. Those are three of the better defenders on this team, and obviously even in the NBA, they're showing to become some of the better defenders in the league. Then you have Keldon, who's you know, he's solid. He's not a bad defender, but he's just solid. He does all his numbers, you know, on the team are pretty well defensively, so he's not a minus either. And then now you have Bateschop again, who's a very solid defender. He's not going to be a weakness where teams are going to try to target him. Whereas McDermott, he's there for his offense and his shooting and his ability to cut off the ball. So I think that'll be an interesting thing to watch is whenever McDermott gets healthy, does Pop, you know, want to stay with trying to bring up the offense a little bit more and being okay with the defense that was there? Because they weren't bad with McDermott either. They were just a minus 4.7 points per 100. But like I said, right now it's 79 possessions and Bateschop just basically being able to play that lockdown defense that teams just don't want to go against. That's showing to be a little bit more successful initially. So again, we'll kind of see what happens here with Bateschop and McDermott's in that starting spot. The last topic is something that Rocky just touched on here, and this is the issue. Not an issue, but it's something that I've seen on Twitter lately is just the conversation. I've seen a few fans who basically want Eubanks not to be getting minutes anymore, and they want Thaddeus Young to be getting, you know, those minutes. And so, you know, let's just talk about these two players and kind of the approach the Spurs have taken with them and how they're distributing their minutes and their roles. So first, let's begin with Thad Young. On offense, he's played in 16 of the 19 games, so he has had a few DNPs early on in the season. He's scoring 7 points on 6 shots, 2 offensive rebounds, 3 assists, 1 turnover, and 15.6 minutes. 93% of his shots do come from the paint, and he's very efficient on those floaters and hooks and also on his layups and dunks. So anytime Thad takes a shot, he's taking a good shot from a very efficient area, and he's being an efficient shooter when he's making them. He's already been in 3 crunch time games, so we do see that the coaching staff does trust him a little bit more in crunch time. He's been in 3 of those games. He's also very efficient when he takes shots or moves the ball on offense, because we know about his passing. You know, those backdoor cut passes to his teammates have been really cool to see this year. He's 4th on the team amongst rotation players and points per possession when he's out there. And then when he has a few post-ups, he has 11 so far this year, and when he posts up, it's mainly to get his teammates to get them better shots. So 64% of the time that he has a post-up, he's going to pass it out. And then on defense, he's very active. You know, he's just good. He's quick about moving his feet and kind of getting his hands in the area of the ball. So he's 2nd best on the teams in deflections per 36 behind only DeJounte Murray. He's, in steals per 36. He's top on the team again. That's per 36 minutes. And then also he's about the same in defensive field goal percentage and fouls with Drew Eubanks. There's not too much of a difference. And we do see in the on off data that according to Cleaning the Glass, the Spurs are a plus 6.3 points per 100 when that is on the floor. Now, when we go to Drew Eubanks, we see that he's played in all 19 games this season, so he's been in the rotation every single night. He's scoring 6 points on 4 shot attempts. He does get to the free throw line pretty much like once per game. He gets 1 offensive rebound, 2 assists, 1 turnover as well, and then he plays about 15.3 minutes. So we do see that when Thad plays in games, he's averaging 15.6. When Drew's in those games, he's averaging 15.3. But overall, in total minutes, Drew does have the advantage there. 86% of his shots do come from the paint. He's efficient on his layups and dunks, those shots in the restricted area. He's not as efficient on those like floaters and jump hooks when you're outside, 3 or 4 feet. He has a little bit of trouble getting those shots. They're not as efficient. And then he's also 9% of his shots do come from the mid range. He's not as efficient either from that shot. The Spurs have not played him in crunch time at all this year. So we do see again that has gotten those crunch time games. And then he's one of the lower players in the points per possession on the team. And when he posts up, 60% of the time he's going to put up a shot. On defense, kind of what Rocky said there earlier was that he's a little bit better than Thad in contesting shots, getting more blocks, getting more defensive rebounds than Thad Young. But in the overall data, we do see that the Spurs are a minus 7.4 points per 100 with Drew Eubanks. Now, some of that could be attributed to because he had to play a starting role for a number of games because Jakob was out. But overall, he is right now a minus on the floor. Rocky, what are your thoughts on these two players? And do you agree with what the coaching staff is doing by basically, continuing to give Eubanks his minutes, but then giving Young those more spot up minutes or kind of different minutes, but it's never as consistent?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm okay. You know, seeing what Pop has been doing. As you mentioned, Young has gotten some DNPs, but it's just crazy to see how much of a vet he is. You know, he was staying ready. So, you know, last game he stood ready and took advantage of his opportunity. And Pop gave after the game. He praised Young for that. So, you know, in 13 minutes he was able to drop 10 points, have 3 rebounds and 2 assists and a steal. And I feel like that's a good thing the Spurs have. You know, both players have different skill sets to the game. You know, as you said in the stats, you know, Eubanks is a better defender, but this is going to be interesting to see, you know, with McDermott coming back, with Vassell coming back, who's going to get less minutes. You know, how does Pop really spread those minutes out? You know, it seems that Eubanks and Young and possibly Trey Jones were the only people that were going to relatively get minutes off the bench, because you see, you know, DeJounte, Keldon, Murray, and Jakob playing heavy minutes. So, and you know what? As we mentioned, what's going to happen with Bates Diop? So you know that you can only go around with so many minutes. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I see both sides too. You know, you have Young, who's been in the league forever, and he has more of a skill set to the offense game. I mean, you have Eubanks, and relatively, you don't see him pulling up. You don't see him giving assists. He's that dirty player. You know, that tough-minded player that the Spurs and any team relatively needs. He does the dirty work, rebounds. You know, draws those fouls, charges, pick and roll, and everything. And not saying that Thaddeus Young doesn't do that, but you know, Thaddeus brings more to the floor. So I mean, I think the question is, you know, what's the best thing that's going to happen for the team? What what path are they really going to? Because, you know, if you don't play Thaddeus, maybe he gets frustrated and demands a trade, but do you want to risk an injury with him, or are you trying to keep him as a piece for your future? You know, you had those trade rumors with him wanting to get, well, not him wanting to get traded, but the teams asking about Thaddeus Young, mm-hmm. you know, like a championship contender. But, I mean, I feel like maybe the coaching staff sees Thaddeus as a key to the future, that one vet that they could have, you know, that can guide those young players on the team.
Okay, yeah. So basically, I kind of agree with you a little bit. You know, a little bit different though as well. You know, so just based on the way that they're putting him in the rotation, Thaddeus Young, I do think that, you know, if we had to talk about which player is going to be here at the end of the season, it's probably going to be Drew Eubanks, and I think that's mm-hmm. why they've, even though yes, you know, it looks like Young should be getting that backup five role immediately. Eubanks, I think, is going to be the player who's here more long term, and so I think that's why they want to keep him in the fold and continue to let him kind of develop. Whereas Thad, they're just kind of getting him some minutes and trying to help out. But you know, I think that, again, I think he's going to be in trade rumors up until that deadline. I think it's in February. I think it's February 10th. Or if not, if he doesn't get traded, well, then I think that he's definitely going to, you know, he could end up being a buyout candidate. So I think that's their approach, is kind of giving Thad some minutes, kind of keeping him in games, but then also, you know, trying to continue to give Eubanks that continued consistent role, because they do want to see what he turns into, because he's more so in that developmental mode. And so because of that conversation about, you know, trades down the line here, I did want to just look real quick on an update. I know I've discussed this, you know, when Thad Young was in training camp, and also with Al-Farouq Aminu before he got waived by the team, was kind of like where could that end up? So I'm not going to go into teams that would have to make a player for player kind of trade. These are teams that have either trade exceptions or a team that has cap space to absorb Young's contract. So let's first begin with a few teams, and we'll kind of discuss and kind of cross some teams off the list. The first one is the Boston Celtics. The reason why I bring them up is because they do have a $17.1 million trade exception, so they could absorb Thad Young's $14 million salary. The way Boston would do this was they would have to waive Jabari Parker. Then they'd be $18.8 million in the tax if they traded for Thad Young. They're currently $6.3 million over the tax. Now, he is a good fit per Profit X. Like, they have a model that kind of tells where a player would be a good fit, which teams are best for him. And Thad Young does fit well with the Celtics. The Celtics, though, aren't doing so well. They're 11-10 out east, and they're 11th in the east right now. They're not even in the playing game range. And so I don't know if they would want to basically go $18 million into the tax for Thad Young. And again, I'm not even sure where he would play on the team. What are your thoughts about Boston, Rocky?
I mean, Boston could be a good fit. It seems that Boston's been really struggling. Mm-hmm. I think it would be a good, possibly a good vet off the bench. The only weapons they really have is Tatum and Jaylen Brown, as you've seen. But it's been real surprising seeing them struggle. You know, just this past year, they were in the playoffs, and they're rising up, and a lot of people thought they were going to take that next step. But it just seems that they regress. But I guess looking at the whole NBA in itself, it's been surprising seeing everyone, you know, in the records. I mean, I never would have expected seeing Washington on top, you know, considering them, you know, just because of their past. But I think Boston would be a possible good fit. I know I saw other teams, like another option that from NBA Twitter saying, oh, bring them to the Suns, and that, and you heard those rumors early in the year. But I feel like Boston could maybe be a spark for them and give them another scoring option alongside, you know, Jaylen Brown, Tatum, and Smart.
Yeah, so again, we'll see if you know, Boston will want to do that, go into the tax go higher into the tax, more into it to bring in a player like Thad Young. And of course, the reason why I'm talking about these trades, because in these kind of scenarios, the Spurs would probably be just trading him and then getting back some sort of a draft asset, whether it's like a second round pick or something like that in these kind of trades, and they don't have to take back a player. Then we look at another team in the situation. That's the New Orleans Pelicans. Now, they can make this work because they also have a big trade exception as well, and they could basically all they have to do is waive one player. It could be somebody like Willie Hernan Gomez or another player who's on a rookie scale contract. They could waive one player, and then basically they'd still, and then they absorb Thad Young into their trade exception, and they'd basically still be safe, where they'd be $9.8 million away from the tax. So New Orleans would not be a tax team if they took in Thad Young. The thing is, the Pelicans are kind of like the Spurs, where they're kind of struggling right now. They're 6-17 overall, 14th out west. And again, I don't know if they will want to, you know, bring in Thad Young, where they already have Valanciunas, they already have Zion, who's going to be coming back soon. They have Brandon Ingram. What are your thoughts about New Orleans if they were to be a team that takes in Thad Young?
I mean, I don't know if they would really consider it. You know, like you said, you know, they're real bottom of the West. You know, what move would that really make for them? You know, Zion's coming back, but I mean, it depends on what direction they really want to go. Are they really pushing for the playoffs, or, you know, are they really going to start rebuilding their team?
from scratch again, I mean, even though they've been rebuilding since the Anthony Davis era. Currently, you know, you have Herbert Jones at power forward on their in their lineup, and their backups are Najee Marshall and then third, you know, Brandon Ingram. But Brandon Ingram starts at the two, obviously. But I mean, what does Thaddeus Young bring to that team? You know, do the Spurs even want to trade? What are they going to be gaining out of the Pelicans? Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe the Pelicans are like, all right, let's do it, and they send a first round pick somehow, and they continue to have poor play, and that's good for the Spurs. You know, we're going to get a really good high pick, but I feel like the Pelicans would be more smarter than that, and I feel like they want to just focus on their young core that they have, but also, you know, prepare for the future.
Okay, yeah, I kind of agree. I can't see New Orleans being that team either. And then the last two teams, I really don't see them making a trade for Thad Young. This is the OKC Thunder. The way they would do this to bring in Thad Young is they would basically waive a player, so maybe somebody like Vit Krejci, and then they would renounce their trade exceptions, and they're so far under the cap, the salary cap, the OKC, that they can basically just trade for Thad Young, and they'd still be $20.9 million away from under the salary cap. He is a good fit per Profit X, but again, the Thunder we've seen are more so also in that rebuild mode where they're 6-14 right now, 13th out west, and they're basically trying to develop players, so I can't see them being a team that takes Thad Young. And then Orlando, the same thing. Orlando has a big trade exception that they could absorb Thad Young. The way they would bring him in is they'd have to waive somebody, maybe someone like Etuan Moore. They'd be like New Orleans, where they'd be safe away from the tax with Thad Young. They'd be $10.4 million away. But then again, Orlando's the worst team. They're 4-18 in the league, 15th out east, and they're basically trying to stay that way because they can end up with the number one overall pick. So do you have any thoughts on either of those two teams? Or you agree that they probably wouldn't go for Thad Young?
No, yeah, I completely agree. I mean, you would have to do something to convince Sam Presti to give up a pick. You know, Sam Presti loves hoarding those picks, and I don't even know what you would have to tell Sam Presti, or you'd have to ask him every single day just to annoy him, hit up his line, hey man, just give me the pick. But I doubt he even considers trading the pick. And then same thing with Orlando. You know, they don't want to win. You know, they're not going to openly come out and say it. But I mean, they have young stars on their team, or not even maybe Jalen Suggs turns into a star. But I mean, they're not going to openly say, let's just start winning. And like I mentioned earlier, or just a little bit, I doubt Thaddeus Young wants to go to one of those teams. It made it seem like in those rumors at the beginning of the season, he wants to go to a contender. Or maybe it wasn't even his, it was just contenders are reaching out to him. So him going from the Spurs, you know, to known for their leadership, you know, their pride, their integrity, and one of those top teams in the whole NBA. You know, even though they're not doing so good, why would you want to leave such a good situation here?
Yeah, and so, you know, again, there's more trade possibilities out there. Like you're right, Rocky. Phoenix was one of the teams earlier this offseason who had interest in Young. So did the Cleveland Cavaliers. And the reason why I brought up these four teams specifically, though, is because these are the teams, again, that it makes the trade easier, where the Spurs trade Thad Young and they just get the draft asset back. They don't have to take back players. The problem with matching contracts is that the Spurs' roster is already full. So when that happens, when you get into those conversations about saying, oh, let's get two players for Thad Young from another team, that gets tough because then the Spurs have to start making decisions as well of who are they going to waive to even make that kind of room. Do they waive Drew Eubanks? Do they waive Kata Bates-Jop? You know, do they waive Jock Lindale? Those kind of situations take place. And so again, just looking first at the trade exceptions teams, those are kind of the ones. Maybe like in January, I start looking at some teams that when you would need to do multiple player trades. So again, that's kind of where I wanted to go with this conversation. And one last thing on this note about Thad Young and Drew Eubanks is that I think this is the reason why Jock Landale's not quite getting the minutes yet and why Spurs fans might need to be a little bit more patient to see Jock. I think that until we know that Thad Young's going to be on the team or not long-term, we won't know where Landale's minutes are coming from. So basically what I'm saying here is, like, let's just say they trade him within the next, you know, month. If that happens, well, then all of a sudden that backup five behind Eubanks now, that becomes Jock Landale's spot to start getting minutes, all those minutes that Thad Young just left available. And then, or let's say that, you know, the trade deadline gets here in February, the Spurs don't find a team for him, but they want to, you know, buy out Thad Young's contract. That way he can go play with the contender, try to chase a ring. Well, then again, it might take till like February, March, and then they waive him. And then you can see maybe Lando start competing with the Eubanks for those minutes. So again, I think that Jock's situation is going to basically stay kind of the same, where he's just not going to play a lot unless it's like a blowout. or if there's like an injury or something happens, because right now, you know, Young and Eubanks are kind of jostling for that backup center position. So, you know, that's kind of where I think that his minutes are coming from. Do you agree with that, or do you have a different opinion?
No, I mean, I completely agree with that, you know, but when Spurs fans hear that, they're going to be super upset, you know. you know how Spurs fans and Spurs Twitter can be, you know, they get super impatient, they want things happening now. And, I mean, everyone thought that Jock was going to get those minutes. You see him shooting the three, and that's one of their problems the team has. They're so inefficient from the three-point line. And, you know, Doug McDermott coming back is going to help them a lot. But I mean, the only two people that are shooting at a relatively good rate this season has been Doug McDermott and Vassell. You know, none of the rest of the squad has been really shooting at a good rate. So people are like, well, maybe Jock can solve the problem. Maybe Bryn Forbes can solve the problem. But just their inconsistent play doesn't really help them. But, I mean, Thaddeus is a good player. And, I mean, it's just relatively up to Pop and how he really devotes the minutes everywhere and how he's really going to take this team. You know, what does he give the minutes more to the young guys and maybe honors Young and say, hey, you know, we're going to trade you and just go through a Young approach, or are we pushing to the playoffs? You know, who knows what the team's going to do? And I guess Spurs fans just have to be patient of what's going to come.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And you know, you're slowly starting to see as well, Josh Primo starting to get some actual real minutes here, where he's been playing like in second quarters and third quarters. And so, but they're also still developing him because they're sending him to like Austin. So like, he's not going to be available for that game against Portland because he'll be playing with the Austin Spurs on that night. All right. So, before we end this episode, don't forget to visit projectspurs.com, Spurscast listeners. Latest up on the site, we have, Colin Reed's back. His latest piece is called The Spurs Breakout Candidates. Check in on one month. And so he's basically looking at how Devin Vassell, how Keldon Johnson, and Lonnie Walker IV have been progressing after the first month of the season. And then Benjamin Bornstein's getting ready for the draft here in a few months with his prospect watching series. This one's about Chet Holmgren. So again, right now, because the Spurs are actually doing better, they're having more success, they're getting further away from being in position to draft Chet Holmgren. But it's a long season. There's still, you know, so many games left. So if they do end up having a bad season win-wise, well, then that's going to help them in getting a player like Chet Holmgren. So if you want to read Ben's profile on Chet Holmgren, make sure you check out projectspurs.com. Thanks to Rocky for joining me here on the Spurscast. Also thanks to Michael De Leon for mixing and producing this episode. From all of us at Project Spurs, stay safe and have a great day.